Thanks, Bob. I appreciate Bob having this course today on a day we don't have a mini camp or an OTA, so Roland and I can be here and show you guys some of the things we're doing. So kind of how this all got started is a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we had a highly drafted player on the first game of the season get hurt. Bad injury, meniscus tear, microfracture, whole nine yards. So when we did surgery, Dr. Lowe was worried about disuse atrophy and weakness and what's the latest and greatest things that we could do to retard atrophy. He got us hooked up through Stefania Bell. Stefania Bell is an ESPN commentator and a physical therapist who works with ESPN and does outside the lines and things like that. And she was doing a special for Veterans Day at the at Brooke Army Medical Center, the Center for Intrepid Johnny Owens in San Antonio. He's done a ton of research on BFR, and they got us hooked up. And Johnny taught us about BFR, and we started using BFR a year and a half ago. We started with one machine a year and a half ago, and now we have four units. We started doing it with one player. Now, I would say 90% of our players that do rehab do some sort of BFR training. So what is blood flow restriction? It utilizes a special surgical tourniquet. There are some important terms that you need to use and be aware of: the limb occlusion pressure. Limb occlusion pressure is when you've cut off all venous outflow and most of arterial inflow. Every person comes with a personal tourniquet pressure, a PTP, and the tourniquets have a Doppler in them. So we measure every athlete's personal tourniquet pressure, and then we'll use 50% of the limb occlusion pressure for upper extremity injuries and 80% of the limb occlusion pressure for lower extremity injuries. Using these numbers creates an optimal environment to create a chemical reaction or a physiological reaction in the limb, and it avoids venous congestion. So one of the major things that we're trying to accomplish is hypertrophy. We are not accomplishing hyperplasia. This has not been proven in human models. It's been proven in animal models that you can produce hyperplasia, but not in human models. So we are producing hypertrophy. We are inducing an ischemic and a hypoxic environment. And the way we induce the ischemic and a hypoxic environment is creating a mechanical tension around the limb with a tourniquet. Mechanical tension causes muscle damage. It increases a localized systemic hormone response. It increases cell swelling. It increases nitric oxygen production, which releases calcium, which causes muscle anabolism. It increases IGF, insulin growth factor, which increases protein synthesis. It increases muscle fiber recruitment. We're going to go through all these because, for me, it was really important to understand the science why BFR works. And if I understood the science why BFR works, I was all in. So hypertrophy, in 2004, Takahara did a paper. And he did. He measured exercise using 20% of the one rep max. It was a lower extremity study. He controlled BFR versus the control group. He used knee extension, used a knee extension machine in an 8-week study. He measured cross-sectional area and strength of knee extensors. The BFR group versus the control group had a 10.3% increase in cross-sectional area after 8 weeks and had a 9.3% increase in strength compared to the control group. There was also a significant rise in HGH, human growth hormone, in the BFR group. There was no change in HGH in the control group. Hormones. While using the BFR, you have a strong anabolic hormone response post-exercise. You increase growth hormone and mechanical growth factor. Mechanical growth factor starts local repair of damaged tissue, which is responsible for hypertrophy. We start up an anabolic cascade, which mediates muscle protein synthesis. We turn on mTOR and we activate the mitogen activated protein kinase. All this increased protein synthesis. All this increased bioavailability of the cells. All this increases the cell's ability to produce more energy and heal and get stronger. Satellite cell activation and proliferation. Satellite cells are stem cells. We have an increase in satellite cell activation and proliferation during blood flow restriction. Increase in cell swelling. You have an increase in the intracellular hydration, increase in protein synthesis. You have a decrease in blood cell destruction, bone cell destruction, and decrease in muscle fiber destruction. Because of this, you don't have any post-exercise soreness. There is no DOMS. no delayed onset muscle soreness. Nitric oxide is increased. With increase in nitric oxide, it stimulates satellite cell activation and proliferation. We also have activation of the sarcoplasmic reticulum, which increases calcium release in the cell, increases the mTOR activation, and all this cascade increases protein synthesis. Heat shock proteins. Heat shock proteins typically transform. They transform from locating and assembling protein to maintaining cellular homeostasis. Heat shock proteins limit oxidative damage, which decreases or limits the amount of soreness you have post-exercise, and it increases hypertrophic adaptations. Muscle fiber recruitment. BFR leads to a decreased oxygen availability. All that makes sense. We're putting a big tourniquet around the limb. Decreased oxygen availability, which increases or which causes a high metabolic accumulation. The slow twitch muscle fibers are exhausted. Then you have increased stimulation of the group 3 and group afferents to the brain. You have inhibition of the big alpha motor neurons, which increases fast twitch muscle fiber recruitment to maintain conduction. So the metabolite theory, muscle activation, BFR utilizes the size principle. We have increased workload, which leads to recruitment of large muscle units, the fast twitch muscles. BFR leads to decreased oxygen availability, which leads to increased metabolic accumulation of lactate. We all can understand that. Increased fiber recruitment, an increase in EMG activity. Yasuda in 2014 did a study, an upper extremity study, where he used TheraBand for biceps and triceps, and he did BFR versus the control group. He immediately tested about 1 hour after BFR. Triceps had a 46% increase in EMG activity. Biceps had a 69% increase in EMG activity compared to the control groups. The metabolite theory, increase in HGH, human growth hormone. We have increase in lactate, increase in hydrogen ions, which causes an increased growth hormone release. Takahara in 2000 did a lower extremity study. He measured plasma HGH, exercise versus BFR, and then exercise and BFR combined. He did 10 minutes of low intensity exercise. There was a 290% increase in growth hormone compared to baseline when compared to exercise alone. There was a 170% growth hormone, 170% increase in growth hormone compared to high intensity training. Well, you'll say, hey, Cap, I can do high intensity training and get a similar result. You can't do high intensity training immediately after surgery. You can't do high intensity training during early stages of rehab process. You can't do high intensity training when players have a significant chondral lesion. You can't do high intensity training when someone's coming off microfracture. You can't do high intensity training, so forth and so on. This is how we fool the body. This is how we fool the body during rehab. We're fooling the body thinking it's doing high intensity training, but you're doing low level exercises. Autocrine actions. There's multiple autocrine actions that are going on during this, during using BFR. There's a decrease in myostatin expression, an increase in muscle mass and strength. Myostatin is what breaks down muscle. So you have a decrease in myostatin expression. In the FOXO, you have a decrease in FOXO expression, which is a decrease in response for muscle atrophy. So you have an increase in potential hypertrophy. So by decreasing myostatin expression and decreasing the FOXO expression, we're decreasing the ability, or we're decreasing hypertrophy. We're decreasing muscle atrophy, and we're increasing the environment for hypertrophy. Paracrine reactions, so these are how one cell affects another cell. Satellite cells are muscle-specific stem cells responsible for regeneration. Using BFR, you have an increase in stem cells, an increase in satellite cells, and you also have an increase in the number of mononuclei per muscle fiber. So instead of each muscle fiber having one nucleus, they have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 nucleus per muscle fiber. More nucleus, more ATP, more energy to the muscle. IGF in satellite cells. IGF is insulin-like growth factor, increases during BFR. You have an anabolic effect, as our anabolic effects are increased with the increase in mechanical load. You have strength gains. Caddy in 2000 did a study of low-intensity exercise, and he did a lower extremity study. He measured knee extensors with BFR versus the control. With BF, and then it was a 10-day study. What he did is he measured an increase in stem cells, the satellite cells, halfway through the study, 3 days post-study, and 10 days post-study. With BFR, there was a 280% increase in satellite muscle stem cells mid-study, a 250% increase 3 days post-study, and 140% increase 10 days post-study versus the control group. Nutrition. Nutrition is very important while you're using the BFR. It's important to ingest 20 to 40 grams of protein immediately after, within 20 minutes of the BFR, and then every 4 hours subsequently. It is recommended that you use whey protein versus soy protein. Whey protein has more amino acids, a higher leucine content, and muscle protein synthesis has been proven that is greater with whey protein versus soy protein. Bone healing. There's a lot of cool research going on right now with bone healing and using the BFR. There's an increase in HGH and growth hormone, increase in IGF-1, increase in the interstitial fluid flow. Interstitial fluid flow increases during weight bearing. A lot of time with acute fractures, you can't actively weight bear. This is a way to fool the body and have increased fluid flow, increase healing response while using the BFR in bone healing, an increase in VEGF. In 2006, there was a walking study done, BFR versus control. It was a three-week study where they measured plasma BAP, which stands for bone alkaline phosphate. There was an increase in osteoblastic activity markers, no increase in the control group versus BFR, and there was a decrease while using BFR in bone reabsorption markers. So we're getting an increase in osteoblastic activity, increase in bone formation. The acute phase of rehab, a lot of times you're non-weight bearing, you're immobilized. We're trying to mitigate disuse atrophy, increase neuromuscular recruitment, increase a systemic response, increase natural HGH levels. So using the BFR in the acute stage, you're getting increase in HGH levels and increase that big acidic environment, which causes all these metabolic cascades we've talked about. The subacute phase, we slowly add mechanical tension. You can bike or walk at low intensities. We'll increase strength, increase hypertrophy, shown to increase VO2 max, increase time to exhaustion, and increase in cross-sectional area. So those are all the benefits that we're getting out of BFR in a subacute phase. Some endurance training, some endurance research that's out there right now. There's an increase or change in VO2 max secondary to BFR in order to maintain cardiac output. There's a decrease in stroke volume and an increase in heart rate. Increase in muscle mass will also shift the VO2, will increase VO2 max due to an increase in metabolically active muscle tissue from inactive adipose tissue. Increase in myocyte count increases peripherally the VO2 capability due to increased mitochondrial count. So you're getting the increased mitochondria because you're getting the increased myonuclei in the muscle fibers. The loading phase of rehab. So we use typically 20 to 30% of 1 RM increase to get increased strength and increased hypertrophy. Our sets are typically 30 reps for the first set. Then we go subsequently 3 sets of 15 reps. It takes about 6.5, 7 minutes average. You want to build up the metabolites when the cuff is inflated. You leave the cuff inflated during the exercise periods and during the rest periods. So there's some research out there now that shows the effects of proximal gains. We have used the upper extremity cuff for rotator cuff injuries, for labral repairs. We put it high on the thigh and we get increase in glute function and hypertrophy of the glute muscles. And here's a study, Abe in 2005, did 20% of the 1 RM max for a lower extremity study. He did squat and leg curl exercises, BFR versus control, and he used 3 sets of 15, 2 times a day for 6 weeks with 4-hour rest in between the exercise sessions. He had a 17% increase in squat strength using BFR and a 23% increase in leg curl strength using BFR. Exercise prescription, our training frequency, low lows associated with BFR does not produce lasting muscle damage. It can be done daily. Some research shows 2 times a day. Largest effect is seen with 2 to 3 days per week. Our exercise prescription is we do strength training with the BFR Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. We do exercise endurance training on stationary bike or stationary piece of equipment Tuesdays and Thursdays. Longer durations have the largest effect size. Using the BFR 10 weeks or longer gets the same or similar results as high-intensity training program. Hypertrophy is seen earlier with BFR training than with high-intensity training programs. Hypertrophy is seen in as little as 2 weeks using BFR. Exercise prescriptions are rest periods. 30-second rest period have been shown to have the largest effect size. The tourniquet stays inflated during the rest period to capture and trap the metabolites. exercise prescription and training intensity, we use loads typically of around 30%. When you're doing cardiovascular training, you want to use loads between 15 and 30% of your VO2 max. Of your VO2 max, it has the largest training effect. Bike and walking usually fall below 15 to 30% of your VO2 max. Response to bike and walking with BFR is significantly higher than controls with the same intensity levels. So what type of tourniquet do we use? We use a Delphi tourniquet. It is is the same tourniquet they use in the OR. It has 225 patents. It's the only medically registered tourniquet made for BFR training. It has a built-in Doppler, so you can measure the personal tourniquet pressure and the limb occlusion pressure. Cuffs are follow safety practice guidelines. The cuffs are tapered to match the limb shape. They're wide to avoid potential nerve injury, and they have different lengths to accommodate different limb sizes. Some cuff application procedures, it's important to inspect the equipment. Limb protection, application should be on the most proximal portion of the upper arm or thigh. The cuff port should always be on the outside lateral aspect. Contraindications, open fracture wounds, diabetes, severe high blood pressure, peripheral artery disease, so forth and so on. You can read it in your handout. Sickle cell disease. Sickle cell trait is a caution. We do it with players that have sickle cell trait, and we haven't had any issues as of today. Thrombus formation. A lot of people ask me all the time, are you worried about blood clots? Are you worried about blood clots post-op? Are you worried about blood clots during the rehab process? The answer is no, because there's an increase in fibrinolytic activity with BFR. Fibrinolytic is an anti-clotting factor. So you're increasing the blood's ability not to clot. So it actually decreases your chance of blood clots. There's been studies done by Johnny Owens, and he did pre- and post-training ultrasounds to assess for potential clot formation. And as of today, all of his work has showed no patients have demonstrated any signs of thrombus formation. An acute bout of BFR significantly increased fibrinolytic proteins and no change in thrombus markers. Just to go a little bit farther and not worry about blood clots. Scope of practice in the state of Texas, physical therapists, athletic trainers, occupational therapists, doctors of chiropractic care are all allowed to use tourniquets. Physical therapists is within the scope of practice, currently working on a consensus statement. Athletic trainers are within the scope of practice under the supervision of the physician that you work under. Johnny Owens has been a great source of knowledge for us. He's also offers multiple continuing education courses across the country and across the state of Texas to get certified in using BFR. And his website is owensrecoveryscience.com. It's a great resource for tons of things, BFR, the courses that he offers to get certified in using the tourniquet. Ongoing trials, and a lot of these trials are going on in San Antonio at the Center for Intrepid, and that are being funded by the military, osteoarthritis, kidney failure, sarcopenia, low back pain, ACL, rotator cuff repairs, chronic Achilles, tendinopathies, fractures, meniscus repairs, and regenerative medicine. There's over 110 references for this talk. If you guys want our reference list, just let me know. I'll email you the reference list. I didn't include it in the handout. And like I said, Johnny Owens is the biggest reference I have. So as of now, I'll open the floor to any questions. Go ahead. So typically, we work up to two sets of 15 minutes. We'll do a session of 15 minutes in the first part of rehab and a session of 15 minutes at the end of rehab. So there is plenty of research out there, and because you're only using the tourniquet for 15 minutes, and because these tourniquets are wide, not these narrow ones like Katsu has, these tourniquets are wide, there has been no reported damage to vessels or nerves. And it is because of the size of the tourniquets, the tapering of the tourniquets, the width of the tourniquets. And you're just not cranking it up to an undetermined amount of pressure. You're measuring the pressure via Doppler and then cranking it down 80% for lower extremity and 50% for upper extremity.